And right now, technology expert Steve McCabe, good morning to you.
Good morning, Catherine.
Have you got a shiny new Apple iPhone 5, have you?
Yeah, it finally got delivered 2 days ago.
How often do you upgrade yours?
Well, I tend to upgrade mine every couple of years. I mean, to begin with, I was as sad and geeky as the rest, and I was getting every new release that came out. I tend to skip a release these days because the features just simply aren't that compelling to make it worth the investment every year. I have to confess, the new one I got is actually a review sample from Apple. I have to give it back.
Right then. Well, so at least you get the chance to have a look at it. So is it much of a change on the previous one? Because we also have like the iPhone 4S, whatever, there's kind of half releases as well, isn't there?
Well, yeah, the answer to that question very much depends on where you live. The huge, great, big marquee feature that everyone was touting about this new thing was going to be faster data connectivity. It's going to be absolutely brilliant. And it's going to be faster than, say, your home Wi-Fi broadband connection. And apparently it's absolutely superb. And I've not been able to try it out because it's not available in New Zealand.
The phone isn't yet.
Well, the phone's there, the hardware's there, and the phone's just sitting there waiting for a 4G network to be established by a New Zealand cell phone company, and none have yet.
Okay, so that confuses me straight off. So if it's 4G, it absolutely can't use the 3G.
It can. The best analogy I can give you would be buying a fantastic new Ferrari and only driving down country lanes on it.
Right, so you can use it, but only for certain things. It's got additional features that can't be used until we're 4G.
Exactly, and it's basic. I mean, I actually sat in, yesterday with this thing in one hand and with my old year-old. I mean, how ancient can you get, really? An old 1-year-old 4S iPhone. And I visited a few websites on both phones simultaneously, and the speeds were identical.
There you go.
So, I mean, there's a few nice features in it. It's got a bigger screen, which is kind of useful if you try and read emails, try and compose emails for that matter. The screen, the colour's brighter and richer. It's very nice. And I have to say, if I were in the market for a new smartphone, I would be very, very tempted by it. But given that I have one that works just fine at the moment, it's not a compelling upgrade.
However, if you're going to Australia a lot, I think 4G is closer over there, which means you would be able to use it there if you're going on business, etc.
Absolutely. Australia, they're going to be, I believe Vodafone are going to be having a 4G network up and running over in Oz within the next 6 months or so. And I understand that Telstra already do. So if you've got the hardware, all you need is a network to drop it into. And so go to Australia and you'll be able to. Same is true in the United States and apparently the UK very shortly.
So for some travellers or business people anyway, there might be some benefits for those extra features now.
Oh, most definitely.
And irrespective of that, what are the present, well, the features that you can use on 3G, much change there on earlier iterations?
No, not. As I say, the screen is bigger. That's the big development here. The design is lovely. It's a very attractive piece of kit, as you'd expect from Apple. But beyond that, no, there's not really a huge, enormous amount. In fact, to be honest, when I was having a look at the telecom website over here in New Zealand, looking at how they were advertising this, given that 4G isn't available and that's the massive feature that they should be trying to sell it around, their tagline is, in fact, it's the thinnest, lightest iPhone yet. And if that's the best they can come up with, then not going to have me handing over my cash right there.
What would it take to encourage a 4G network to New Zealand? We took a long time to get to 3G, didn't we, from memory?
Yes, absolutely. When I first came to New Zealand 3 years ago, 3G existed, but coverage was a touch spotty. It's now getting better, but what you're going to have to do is convince your cell phone carriers that our market is big enough to warrant the investment in it, and that the additional sales of kit, like, for example, the iPhone or other smartphones that support 4G, would increase sufficiently to cover the costs of building out that network. Now, I don't know what it would cost them in actual dollar terms, but presumably they've decided that they're going to get enough sales regardless. They're still going to sell these things. People are still going to be queuing up at midnight to be the first person to get it, whether it was 4G or 3G. So they've obviously made a cynical marketing decision that says, yeah, we don't need to, we'll still sell the things. To give you an example of that, and this is one that I find kind of grates a little bit. When Apple released their very first iPhone, it was back in 2007 in the US, they had a feature called visual voicemail. And the idea with this is, if someone leaves a message on your phone, the way that we're used to doing it is dialing a number and listening to a message that says, to hear your new messages, press 1, press 2 to delete. And all, we're familiar with this. What Apple devised was a system whereby on the screen of the phone, it will show you a list of all the voicemail messages that are waiting for you. And you can just, you can manage them through the phone. You can delete them. You can play them back in any order. And it is very, very convenient. And it does require a certain amount of buy-in from the cell phone company themselves. AT&T were Apple's launch partner, and they did it. Now, that was in 2007. Vodafone were Apple's launch partner in New Zealand in 2008 and said, no, we haven't got ourselves ready for this yet. It's now 2012. Vodafone have yet to incorporate this. And when I contacted Vodafone to find out their plans, they said, nah, we're not planning to do it in any time in the near future. So that's a feature that's 5 years old, and they've still not bothered implementing.
What is the big selling point, then, for this new phone in New Zealand?
That's a somewhat difficult question to answer. As I've said, there's always going to be people who want to have the latest, shiniest toy, and there is a small degree to which I'm guilty of that. If you're in the market for a new phone, it's as good as any you'll see. It's got all the features you expect from a phone, and it's fantastic on that level. If you're looking to upgrade, especially if you're going to have to buy out of a service contract with your existing carrier, at that point, I'm less convinced that it's an essential upgrade.
What about the overall evolution of smartphones? When did we get the first, actually? 2000, I think you had the first version, didn't you?
We're talking about the iPhone, which has to a certain extent become synonymous with smartphones these days. Yeah, it came out in 2007. It was unveiled in January. And if you've watched the video of Steve Jobs, I mean, that was quite a theatrical presenter. He was quite a showman. And he stood there and he said, you've got three devices in one. It's going to be a smartphone. It's going to be a cell phone. And then the audience went wild. The assembled geeks just went crazy. And he said, it's going to be a widescreen iPod, touchscreen iPod. And everyone's going absolutely crazy. And he said, and it's going to be a breakthrough internet communicator. And there was a big hush because no one quite knew what that was. No one really had any idea where he was going with that one. But obviously, you know, good presenters know that you always unveil things in threes. It's always this, that, and the other. Three's this magic number. He's got this third thing of an internet communicator. And everyone went, oh, okay. But the reality these days is that this thing that you have in your pocket, whether it's made by Apple or Samsung or any of the other people who make these phones, it's not really just a phone anymore. We call it the smartphone, but it's not. What it basically is now is, as Steve Jobs said, it's an internet communicator. It effectively is a computer in your pocket that just happens, incidentally, to have the ability to make phone calls as well.
I'm curious about that, though, because apart from texting and maybe checking emails, you don't sit and word process by and large on your phone, do you?
No. There were people who tried to convince you to begin with that, oh, yeah, this can do anything. And the keyboard really is a bit clunky. I dislike typing on a phone keyboard, whether it's an iPhone or any other. I find them too small, personally. But for short, brief messages, yeah, it's very, very convenient. But in addition to that, I mean, obviously, Facebook has taken off enormously through people being able to access it through smartphones. To be able to access, let's think, for example, you've got your music being played on these devices continuously these days. I mean, the kids I see at school, the way that they listen to their music is through their phones. They don't make phone calls. They do all other things. I've got Wikipedia on my phone. Suddenly, effectively, we're now going back to Douglas Adams' old idea of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I have got the entire knowledge and wisdom of the entire internet in my pocket. It's fantastic for that.
So you're saying Jobs, even though no one knew what he was talking about at the time, proved right. It was less of a phone and very much more of a mini computer.
Basically, yes. As I say, everyone was in the run-up to the announcement saying Apple are going to unveil a phone, it's going to be the most incredible phone ever. And so everyone focused on the phone bit of it. And the truth is, on my phone right now, I've probably got about 40 or 50 apps. I hate that word, but I don't know what else we're supposed to call them these days. But basically, it's got this incredible range of functions, of which telephony happens to be one. And it's an increasingly underused one. In fact, I was having a quick look before I came into the studio. The last phone call I made on my phone was almost a week ago. I don't really use it as a phone that much.
What about the comparison with the tablet computers then? And you mentioned the iPhones being synonymous, but these days the Android market is extremely large, isn't it?
Oh, very definitely, yeah. Yes. In fact, in terms of overall market share of platforms, I believe that the Android platform now outsells the iPhone in terms of units sold. The way that Apple like to spin that is that Apple make all of the iPhones, however a number of different companies make Android phones. But yeah, Android has definitely penetrated in New Zealand enormously so.
When these smartphones started out, we didn't have the tablets as such, did we? We had the laptops, obviously, but not the tablets. So what has been, how is our division of labour between the different bits of equipment, if we've got access to it, how has that changed, and has the tablet market eaten into the cell phone market, or sorry, the smartphone market at all?
It's a very difficult one to answer, because for the longest time we had very, very clear defined markets. Everyone knew what a laptop was, they knew what it was for, they knew how to use it. We understood the concept of the laptop. We then get this new device that we're told basically is an extension of the phone, and so our understanding of a smartphone depends on our understanding of a phone, and we sort of work around that concept. The tablet came along, and it was completely new. It was something that we weren't familiar with, and so the people who brought out the first tablets got to define what a tablet was, how the market would operate, and so to a certain extent, yeah, I've seen the tablet starting to eat into the laptop market. I know of people who are starting to use the tablet. These are people who primarily would use a laptop for passive consumption of material, web surfing, for example, or who might use it for largely text-based operations such as writing or emailing. If you're getting into specialist activities like, for example, design work that's going to involve manipulation of objects on a screen, of less use. But if you're primarily a text-based person, especially with the new clip-on keyboards and Bluetooth keyboards you can get, iPads are definitely starting to cannibalise the laptop market a little bit.
You mentioned, I know you're a school teacher,
yes.
You mentioned earlier listening to music on the iPhone. What are schools' policies these days about when kids are allowed their technology in class the whole time? Is it theirs to have and to use, or is this a different policies in different schools?
It's very, very much school by school. And so some schools are saying, I mean, I remember we talked about this last year, Oriwa College are starting to require that all incoming students have iPad or comparable device, and they're actually requiring that. The problem then comes, I mean, we know that kids are going to be having cell phones and they're largely using them for texting in class. We know that that's going on. And I think the reality is that ship has sailed now. We're never going to put a stop to that. The issue then becomes, what are they using them for? If it's taking them away from the lesson, then it's not a good thing. If kids are using their cell phones to look up information, then why would you ever want to prevent that? I've had kids in my science classes videoing experiments. If it's promoting their interest in the lesson, then that has to be a good thing, regardless of what medium it's doing it on. But when they're simply wanting to play music in class and that's going to disrupt, then you want to put a stop to that.
They're probably not wanting to play Neil Young, most of them, but who knows?
They've probably never heard of Neil Young.
Unless their folks have got the old album out or something. Why is Neil Young on your mind, apart from the fact he's got a big bio out, hasn't he?
Yes, well, he's basically decided that it's time to pop up on the radar again. And you know, we're mentioning music, and I listen to the stuff that the kids listen to at school, and I think, dear Lord, that counts as music, because I'm old like that. But the thing is, the music that they're listening to is, interestingly, when it's being recorded these days, a lot of music is actually being mastered with small portable devices and little tinny headphones in mind. And so they are being mastered in such a way that we're expecting these days you're going to listen to your music on a cheap pair of speakers, played actually out of your phone using the tiny built-in speaker or through the headphones that came with your phone. And this is, to the purists at least, a shockingly bad way of listening to music. You're not going to get the dynamic range, you're not going to get the detail and the subtlety. Now, there is a degree to which audiophiles can be dismissed as people who are more interested in listening to the equipment rather than to the music. But there is a degree of truth to this. If you listen to some of the music that's being produced right now, there is no subtlety to it. There is no dynamic range because it's being prepared and it's being mastered and it's being produced with the intention of playing through rubbishy cheap tinny speakers. So what Neil Young's done is he's decided, you know, wonderful old curmudgeon that he is, that this is intolerable. We need to go back to being able to pick out every last sound in the studio. So, you know, when the bass player sneezes in the background, you need to be able to hear that. And so he apparently, with the cooperation of the chairman of Atlantic Records, vocal Craig Coleman, he apparently has now developed a new system called Pono, which is going to be a digital music system, but apparently it's going to have all the clarity of master tapes. Quite how he's going to make that work has yet to be seen, but apparently if you buy into his system, you buy his equipment and his files, you'll then hear that absolute sparkling clarity. You'll hear the plectrum drop on the studio floor.
It's still going to be digitised, though, isn't it?
Well, that's the big issue, yeah. Quite how he's going to do this, I don't know. Maybe it's going to be extraordinarily detailed digitising. And at that point, he does actually make a good point. You know, the phones that we're using, the MP3 players that we're using right now, they use very, very tightly compressed files. And 10 years ago, when these things were first really coming to the market, we didn't have the bandwidth, we didn't have the storage capability to handle big files that could contain more detail. The only thing that Neil Young has really tapped into, and I think he's onto something here, is we can suddenly now quite reasonably, cheaply and affordably manage bigger files that can contain more detail in the music. The issue is, what we're going to end up having to do now is, as I can't take credit for the actual comment, but I'm sure many people are saying it, but he got a load of other musicians in to discuss this, and Jim James from a tolerable American band called My Morning Jacket, his remark was, I've already bought Aretha Franklin's Respect a dozen times, do I have to buy it again? That is going to be the issue. Are we really going to want to buy all our music all over again, simply could sit in a darkened room with a really expensive pair of headphones and go, oh, I heard that bit now.
Who's getting in behind this, though, are some of the record companies who are, of course, so testy and agitated about piracy. Are they getting involved in these new formats and these new platforms?
Well, see, if I was a record company, I would think of anything that gives me the opportunity to sell my music all over again, I'd be right behind it. And as I say, Craig Coleman, who's the chairman of Atlantic Records, apparently helped the development of this new system. Their parent company, Warner, apparently have also signed up. Now, they're saying that Sony and Universal have been approached. Now, what exactly that means, I don't know. You know, you can approach people all the time. They're going to say no. But apparently he's trying to get them on board. I have a feeling that this is going to end up, it'll be pronounced Pono primarily. That's my sense.
It's interesting playing music off smartphones. You know, they're so expensive relative to the old kind of cheap, dunky cell phone you can have.
Oh, yeah.
Does it risk shortening their life? However much you hammer it, are you better off buying perhaps a little cheap iPod as the means of playing your music rather than hammering your poor old phone?
It's difficult to say. I mean, these things, whether you're buying an iPod or a phone, whatever you're buying these days, they do tend to have kind of built-in obsolescence, to be perfectly honest. The battery is the first thing that's going to go on them. They are, I don't want to say they're disposable, that's a little bit harsh, but they're not
cheap enough to be disposable.
We're kind of getting there these days, definitely. Mm. They're not built to be your Bang Olufsen stereo that's going to sit on your sideboard for years. They're built to be stuck in your pocket, carried around, probably dropped. There's a reason why there's a huge market for cases for iPhones in particular, but for most brands of smartphone, you can buy cases because they do get dropped. I mean, whoever's listening right now, just ask yourselves, how many people listening right now or your children have dropped your phones on the floor or into the sink or into the sea, for example? You know people are doing this all the time. It's kind of reached the point where they're becoming disposable.
I tell you what, Steve, I dropped a smartphone a hell of a lot less than I used to drop the old thing that I could put back together again in 5 seconds flat. I'm very, very careful with that.
They do encourage you to baby them a little bit, don't they?
Oh, they do. Good talking to you, Steve McCabe, technology commentator.